Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Oh, we get it. I'm seeing lights in the chat, per usual. That's how you know it's exactly the right time to start.
Shut up. Nobody's late.
Us being late means we are exactly on time. How y'all feeling?
I just realized my desk is mad high. Is it? No, I'm just slouching. All right, we're good.
Man, it is playoff time.
It is.
Oh, my goodness.
Chat, how are y'all feeling? It's playoff time. I went through two straight days of watching 10 straight hours of basketball. It was exhausting, but that's the first weekend for you.
Oh, my God, your job is so hard.
That first day is always so funny because the first month before that, you're so like, when are the playoffs gonna come? You know, I'm still watching every night, but really don't give a shit right now. And the playoffs come around, you're like, like you're on top of the
dude,
world.
My brain feels overstimulated because so many things are like happening all at once while we're like going through the playoffs, whether it be like the whole Anthony Edwards shit, him just like elevating. In front of our eyes, Jokic still being Jokic, you know, and seeing the Joel Embiid experience just feel like the Joel Embiid. There's so much shit happening all at once, so it's hard.
But it's lots to talk about, which is great because we have lots of content to film. Where today, you know, you guys are getting a new episode on Friday like usual. Lots of playoff basketball to talk about. I see everybody in the chat spamming all their predictions for these series, talking about their favorite teams going to win it all.
Keep them coming.
Save that because we're going to give you guys plenty of time to talk about every single series. As you guys see by the title of the stream, today we will be overreacting on purpose. You know, we're going to give our first reactions to game one of every series that happened over the weekend, right before game two starts today. Before that, though, we're going to do what we always do. We have new stories to go over.
Woo!
Well, what should we start with?
Say again? I didn't hear you.
I said, what do you want to start with? What first news story?
That is lost.
Oh, man. First news story. There's plenty of entertaining ones. Why not start off with what Kendrick Perkins said about Shaquille O'Neal, and also he mentioned something about Charles Barkley as well.
He
basically called out what a lot of people have been assuming or whatever. I don't know if anybody seriously takes what Shaq and, you know, Charles have to say. They're peak entertainment. They're fantastic entertainment. He was like, you guys don't watch any basketball, blah, blah, blah. And Shaq went ahead and clapped back at him and said something like, you average 5 points per game. You can't talk about me.
That's always a Shaq response. He was like, why is a bench player talking about two Hall of Famers? Yeah. Anyway, the funniest part about this is it's coming from Kendrick Perkins. You know, we know what inside the NBA is. You said peak entertainment. We're here for a reason. We know what we're getting from them. We're not expecting Zach Lowe commentary. Kendrick Perkins gives you neither. Kendrick Perkins gives you the exact same level of depth with far less humor, far less chemistry. So quite the funny messenger for this one.
I'm going to push back on that. I think
he is funny. Never mind. Let me not say
he's funny. Kendrick Perkins in the last like 9 months has really leveled up his humor to where it's not just like, yo, what are you talking about? It's actually like, okay, I can see the vision on that one. I have to give him some props.
Okay, fair enough. Listen, to each their own. To each their own, I guess. If some people find Kendrick Perkins funny, more power to him. Keep doing it. Yeah, it's that's just funny because this came off the heels of all the Drake and Kendrick beef. So it's just like we're getting disses left and right. Every single industry of media just has smoke nonstop.
Did you see somebody, I forget what outlet, but somebody had wrote something because like Taylor Swift had some, she had some lines with like Kim Kardashian in her album. And somebody was like, yeah, because of Taylor Swift, they proved that 2024 is the year of the diss track.
Yeah.
And I was like, do you not know what's happening on the other side of the country?
Side note, Matthew just tipped $69 and then followed it up with a $10 donation. $79 from Matthew and $1 from Mika. We appreciate you, Mika. You said blood from Germany. Shout out. Matthew said, with his $69 donation, I'm here to hear Isaac give his opinion on gritty hard worker and man you would let date your daughter, Peyton Pritchard.
Oh my God, we gotta bring that series back.
That is one sneaky athletic motherfucker. That is one boy, one man you want to take home to moms about all the you want.
Take
Peyton
home to Pritchard moms. Is crazy. The culture child, man. I've never heard you say that phrase before.
All that the is fucking, crazy. All the. What are some more of them? He never leaves the gym. He's a gym rat.
Gym rat. He's really good on the whiteboard. You know,
plays again the right way.
High IQ. Good God.
Ultimate teammate. Great motor.
Real locker room presence.
Real. Oh, now we're nasty.
Just a fan favorite, you know.
Yeah, man. Yeah. He also said, so is this Lakers versus Nuggets series going to be the closest sweep of all time? I guess that goes to last year. Can't get much closer than last year's sweep, huh?
That's sick, man.
What was the margin? Do you know what the margin was for last year's sweep?
I think most of the games were single digits, unless there was like garbage time buckets at the end. Mm-hmm. Most of them came down to single digits.
Because I remember like the Celtics Nets series in 22. That was like the margin of victory on all of that was like 7 or 8 points. Like that was like super, super close.
Yeah. Right, speaking of the Lakers, Anthony Davis was not a finalist for Defensive Player of the Year. The top three are Rudy Gobert, Victor Wembanyama, and Bam Adebayo was the third guy, surprisingly.
Ooh.
Anthony Davis was asked about this. He said, I'll never get it. The league doesn't like me. I'm the best defensive player in the league. I can switch 1 through 5. I can guard the pick and roll the best in the league from a big man standpoint. I block shots. I rebound. All facts. How do you guys feel about this? Do you feel like he should have been a finalist at the very least?
I mean, all the stuff that he's talking about that he does well, Bam Adebayo does well too. Like, Bam Adebayo is also very, very versatile. Bam Adebayo is also a very good, you know, pick and roll defender. Like, he does a lot of stuff very well. The reason that he's a finalist as well. I think it's weird having, like, especially with the MVP, like, you come out and you see the ballots and, like, you used to have, like the fourth and fifth. And now once you have the finalists, it's really just top three. I want to know how close he was to the third spot in terms of voting. I haven't seen the voting split or anything like that. But if that's something where with all the awards, I think we can kind of maybe go back to where you can see 1 through 5 and start giving everybody a little bit more love.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just comes down to the fact that voters went with Bam over AD because he has a better team defense. I don't think anybody thinks that Bam is better at much defensively than Anthony Davis. We all know how talented he is. But, you know, like we talked about in the past, the DPOY award is a very much a team award as much as it is individual. I think Wemby is a huge outlier for being top three despite having a bad team defense because he's Wemby and one of the best defensive playmakers you've ever seen, especially from a rookie. He's an outlier there. Otherwise, you typically have to have like a top five defense to be a serious candidate. And yeah. People just thought the Lakers were too mid to give him votes.
Yeah, no, if I'm Anthony Davis, I'd feel sick to my stomach if I saw this rookie go ahead and get more votes than me, more recognition than me, because Anthony Davis has reached, he's always been a great defender, but the levels that he's reached as of late, all around defense, you know, like helps hide. Of course, shot blocking has always been there. All the facets, like it's, I'd be sick to my stomach if I'm AD, and honestly, like you're right, he would never win that type of award unless his team ends up being like one of the three best defensive teams. And also like they have to, you know, obviously do well in the WNL's column.
Yeah. It is what it is. He's going to go down in the same way that Eric Spoelstra is as being one of the best coaches of all time that don't have a coach of the year. It is what it is. Same thing happened to Tim Duncan. Sometimes people just fall through the cracks because there's a lot of talented players.
Sick.
Shout out to Horse of Jokic for tipping $1 and shout out to Elena, chat frequenter, for donating $3. Appreciate you guys.
Lit.
Shout out to you.
Speaking of somebody else on that DPOY ballot, NBA players had a straw poll this week that a lot of stuff came out gauging their opinions on various things. One of which they were asked, who is the most overrated player in the NBA? 81 votes were cast. And Rudy Gobert earned 13% of them, the most in the league, beating out Jordan Poole, Trae Young, Dylan Brooks, James Harden, Bradley Beal as the next guys. NBA players do not fuck with Rudy Gobert. How do y'all feel?
That is hilarious. Why are folks saying he's the most overrated player in the NBA as if people are out here proudly saying with their chest, I want to build my team around Rudy Gobert? Nobody is saying that.
Yeah, well, what Donovan, you know exactly why. Because he's soft and people don't like him and they think he's annoying and they think he is unrespectable for whatever reason you want to, whatever word you want to give it, they don't like him as a person. So they think his DPOIs are undeserving.
There's that. And it's also like when like people talk about Rudy Gobert and him defensively in like an all-time context, they talk about him like he's one of, you know, he has 3-4 DPOIs. Like he's one of the best defenders of all time. But and this was an argument that I heard Draymond make whenever Rudy won over him. He's like, there's no situation that you would not want Draymond Green on the floor, whereas there are certain situations where you wouldn't necessarily love to have Rudy Gobert out there. And then also, when you have Gobert and he's an all-time great defender, and you're like, all right, go up against, you know, go stop Jokic. Go stop Embiid, right? Go stop, enter center here. And you get cooked by all of them, a lot of people aren't going to like that. It doesn't look good on its face value.
Yeah, but definitely on face value. But we can also recognize that's fucking stupid, right? Like we can recognize that's not true.
I mean, there's some like Donovan thinks there's true some to it. there's some aspect to it where like I do understand. Rudy Gobert plays a style of defense, and he elevates your defense in a certain way, and he's not going to be the also. There's nobody in the world who can stop Jokic or stop Embiid, exactly. Right? And shut them down. I do understand that. But if you are the guy that has like 3-4 DPOYs, it would be nice if that guy could be like, okay, I'm gonna at least make you work for stuff. Jokic looks at Rudy Gobert and is like, oh yeah, it's like that video of Shannon Sharp where he's like, yams, cornbread, mac and cheese. that's Jokic whenever he sees Gobert. And it's like, I wish that wasn't the case for the four-time DPOY.
Sure, but again, nobody would. He would be scoring on Mutombo that easy, too. He'd be scoring on everybody that easy of NBA history because you can't stop the guy with the way the modern NBA works. And the reason we talk about the Timberwolves as being the best matchup for him is because they have a Rudy Gobert to be able to use as a weapon to help slow him down. Like, he is an advantage there, you know? And the whole thing about, like, there's situations you don't want him on the court is such a dumb narrative, which we'll talk about this. We will talk about pretty soon when we talk about the first game we saw against the Suns. Listen, this is the first year we've seen Rudy Gobert with a really good defensive team around him. There was 0 point in the game against the team with the three most talented ball handlers in the perimeter where I ever felt like Rudy Gobert shouldn't be on the court. That argument is so outdated. I understand you want him to be better because 4 DPOIs puts him in the upper echelon. You want him to be Hakeem or Tim Duncan or whatever. He's not, and I understand, but the whole played off the court thing is so outdated.
And that's, I think that for me is where it really like, I really, really do see where NBA players are coming from because I would like at a certain point you take away all the schemes, right? All the game plans, we're gonna try to do this, right? We'll switch it up here. At the very core of it, I would like to say, hey Rudy, one on one, we will take the other four guys and we'll you know mix it up however possible. But let me get the all time great defender. Let me get you in a one-on-one situation. Let me help you. Let me see you do it. And it's just not necessarily possible with him.
Yeah, but that's just not how the modern NBA works. It's not possible with anybody, really.
Wait, real quick. But I don't want to diverge too quickly away from this conversation because it was a really good one. But who the fuck put John Collins on this list? Who out here in the NBA has a personal vendetta against John Collins? You see star players, Devin Booker, hated villains, Dylan Brooks, Jordan Poole. John Collins has no place on this list.
Who thinks John Collins has been in trade talks for 2.5 years? And I bet you people are like, yo, who wants him? Like, why are we talking about him like some nice trade target? He's not that great, you know? So that's probably why he's on there.
If you have some personal vendetta against John Collins and you're pushing this anti-John Collins propaganda, I am praying for burner. You. That's your yes. Me? Nah, I would never. He got me through some times.
Speaking of this player vote thing, there's one more. Tom Thibodeau was voted the number one coach in the NBA that players would least like to play for. How do you guys feel about that? That's surprising?
I agree.
It's not surprising. Oh, my bad. You hate winning? You hate 50 wins? You hate a top seed? Okay.
And not. I'd love to win. But I would my ACL, my knees, my MCL.
So you're not about winning. It's okay. It's okay. Winning is not a priority for you. You don't care about a winning culture. That's fine, right? Everybody has different priorities. Some people get into the NBA because of the lifestyle. Some people want championships and the glory. That's okay. That's fine. Stay over there, right? We're going to do what we do. and everything is okay.
If you were to play under Coach Tibbs for a year, you wouldn't be able to walk by the age of 26, Donovan. You would not be able to do so. You'd be done. You need a cane for the rest of your life.
And I'd be okay with that.
For the love of the game. All right, what's next? The NBA players also voted for who should be MVP. Did you guys get a chance to see this?
I did. I saw that.
Okay, well, yes, I was going to ask you what you think about it. If you didn't know, what your guess would be. But since Jokic, you guys already know. Jokic got 41% of votes. Shea got 36.9%. And Luka only 10%. My God. The NBA players in this thing see through the Luka facade and don't think that him dribbling nonstop makes him the MVP and yada yada. I don't actually believe that, but that's the narrative.
Now I love it. I love it. I saw a tweet a couple months ago where they were like, somewhere around 2016, people stopped using ball hog and started using heliocentric.
Real quick, I love shout out too. To Kevin Gillicky for donating. Shout out to Kevin for donating $30. He said the Celtics are going to set the record with the most games played to win the finals. They're going to win 4-7-game series. My God, I do not think it'll be that difficult. But shout out your team. I guess if it's going to be that hard.
I mean, they always make it that difficult.
True.
They always make it tough.
So back to this. How do you guys feel about Luka being such a small margin of MVP votes among the players?
Luka getting just, 5% more votes than Jason Tatum is absolutely disgusting. I don't know. I understand the Shea wave and all that shit. OKC's, they're the new boys on the block, super popular. And what Shea's been able to do has been remarkable. But I don't know if he deserves it that much more over Luka. Like, that is insane. Shea deserves it over him, sure. But by that much, come on now.
Yeah. People are, one seed winning moves players, I guess. And like you said, he's new. He's interesting. He's ethical buckets. He's not the ball hog, for lack of a better word. I guess people just value that more and think that's more valuable than somebody who, I guess if you're a player and you have to defend and play against Luka Doncic and you just see him doing everything, getting his numbers, constantly having the ball in his hands, I guess it rubs people the wrong way.
Yeah, that's what I think. I think it's a little bit hating from the NBA players because I feel like, especially, and I don't know who was polled, but I feel like a lot of like the good and even great players in the league, they'll look at Luka and it's like, you let me hold the ball that much, I'd score that much too, right? I'd have that many assists if I held the ball for 20 seconds out of the shot clock. It's probably a little bit of that where you see Shea and he's more of a traditional number one option where he's going out getting buckets. He can play two ways. That's also another thing people might be hating on the or not hating, but pointing out the defense discrepancy between Luka and Shea. So I think that two-way brings a little bit of value.
Very fair. Y'all, we're at 220 likes. Over 1,000 of you in here right now early in the stream. Can we get to 500 likes? Is that possible? I think it is.
Can we do it?
I ain't gonna lie. That number sounds absolutely... That's a disgusting ratio, Isaac. I am talking to all you viewers watching right now. There's over 1,000 of you in here. And we don't even have 300 likes yet. What is going on? Y'all ain't got nothing better to do. We don't have nothing better to do, too. Just being real. We all waiting for the playoffs to start, and you can't even give us a like, bro. Time will move faster. The stream will move faster. Let's get time going. Damn.
Speaking of something I like to hear, let's talk about some good familial looking out for one another. Giannis says he signed with Nike over Adidas because Adidas wasn't sure if they would give a contract to Thanasis as well. He said it's both of us or none of us and went with Nike. How do y'all feel about this?
Shout out you, Giannis. Shout out you.
I love
this is what I like to see. This is what I like to see. You make sure the whole family eats.
Yep.
And nah, man. Everybody knows this is why Thanasis is on the books. Because Giannis says, we know the game.
Bro, NBA stars need to do nepotism for their family. They need to do it. There's bottom of the bench roles that don't fucking matter. Every team has a player you've never heard of that doesn't play. Give it to their brother. Give it to the best player on the team's brother. Why not?
Exactly. What do you have to lose? And this is also not the first time that we've seen some shit like this before happen. A couple years ago, or maybe like 10 years ago, we saw Derrick Rose go ahead and get his brother a contract with Adidas, bro. That came out. Everybody was like, oh my God, what the hell? A lot of this shit happens. It just doesn't come up in news or anything like that because there's no real motion between these players and they don't have a commercial or shoe or whatever. But it's common. Adidas, humongous L.
Yeah, and Derrick Rose's brother's contract is like 30 years long. He didn't pay till like 2035 or something.
Giannis has to be one of the best siblings of all time because not only has he provided his whole family with generational wealth just from himself, his brother has a ring, right? Now he has a contract with Nike, and he has his own podcast. He's given him the keys to life, right? You have money, a ring, and a platform. What more do you want?
You're chilling. Brother of the year.
All right, man, we can move on to the topic of today's episode. Let's talk about every single playoff game from over this weekend. What game do you want to start with? You pick one.
I mean, let's go ahead and get it out the way. Let's talk about the New York Knicks versus the Philadelphia. Yeah!
Let's talk about it. Here. Let's talk about grit and grind. Let's talk about Josh Hart, man. Let's talk about making timely plays. Come on. Let's talk about Deuce McBride. How about Deuce McBride, bro? Oh, my God.
So listen, like
we
you
were
said,
talking at the trade deadline. No, I won't call myself. We were talking at the trade deadline, talking about trying to go get Malcolm Brogdon, and Deuce McBride was there all along. Came in. He said, Jalen Brunson, I know you're struggling. I see you forcing. I got you, big bro. And Deuce McBride comes in, lights up the Garden, everybody. It doesn't matter. Oh, my goodness. I was so hyped. Except for the third quarter, because that was absolutely ridiculous. Joel Embiid goes out. His knee almost falls off, and we give up a double-digit lead. Should have never happened. But outside of that, Josh Hart is like, hey, you're gonna disrespect me? Don't you ever look at me in my face and leave me open like this again. Kyle Lowry, don't you ever come and sit here in Madison Square Garden trying to disrespect me like that. Nick Nurse, I don't care if you have Jordan 4s on. I don't care how icy your necklaces are. You are not nothing compared to us. And we're going to go in today. We're going to win game 2. We're going to end the series today. I love it.
He thinks he's on the team, and I fuck with it.
Listen, I respect
it. It's okay.
I respect it.
You don't know winning.
Listen. He said you can't relate. You don't know joy. Nothing good happens to your team. The team you're on is terrible. But no, listen, I respect it. I'm going to let you cook. This is going to be one of the most exciting series to me because I don't know who's going to win it. I think this is probably the second or third best team in the Eastern Conference right now, barring what happens to Giannis and Dame and their connection. If the Knicks can win this series, they can beat anybody outside of Boston. And I'm rooting for them because this is the most likable team in I don't know how long. Brunson, obviously probably the most likable star in the league. Josh Hart, as a Lakers fan, I've had a soft spot for him forever. He was a rookie on my favorite team. I watched him part of the young core. It's awesome seeing him cook. Dante DiVincenzo is one of the most unheralded players in the league. Isaiah Hartenstein, OG Anunoby, all these guys that are just likable. They just work together. The power of friendship, like you said many times, Donovan, has transferred over to them. I want to see them make the conference finals. I think we need to see it.
I 100% think it can happen. First of all, for the play that Embiid got hurt on was one of the craziest plays that I've ever seen. For somebody to already be hurt and be that big and to throw it off the backboard and go catch it and dunk on somebody, that's crazy. That's one. Yeah. Two, he should have never came back in that game. He was not okay. He had to stop guarding pick and rolls. Nick Nurse is like, you are going to stand in one place and move 2 feet to the left and 2 feet to the right, and that is it. I am so intrigued to see just how they manage him for the rest of the series because it's wild that he was even out there. But Mitchell Robinson was able after that was able to come in and play fantastic defense. He was getting these offensive rebounds, which is really what everything is built off of for the Knicks, like getting second chance points, getting extra possessions. So that's good. Maxi and Kyle Lowry were crazy. I thought that Maxi not only had a great game like offensively, defensively, he was fantastic. He was great.
I love the Knicks, man. The Knicks, like you said, Isaac, they're easily one of the more likable teams in the league right now, especially knowing where they came from. All the Knicks fans, like Donovan, he's humble as fuck now, or at least he should be, because of all the – you went through the trenches, not going to lie. You went through the trenches, and this is your opportunity. This is your time to talk shit. You deserve it. Congratulations,
Okay, they won one game. Let's calm down.
No, do your thing. They won one game for sure.
No, we won Boston. But this –
Oh yeah, there was some headline where they put it on the jumbotron or some shit like that. Yeah. Like Knicks versus Boston. Ooh,
crazy. There's a dunk. Y'all saw that? Check this out. Let's watch it again. Let's watch this dunk back. Look at this play.
Looks like an atomic bomb, bro.
This is so sick.
This is insane.
the way he just bodied OG and just falls down like Godzilla down. Next play.
Now that right there encapsulates his entire NBA career, dude. Yeah. Like when that motherfucker is on, there's none that you can do about it, but he's not going to be on for that long because
and apparently he's fine. He felt something, some like discomfort, and it like scared him. So he went down and he had to like get confidence back in that knee after feeling that. Went back to the locker room. They deemed that he was completely fine. That's going to be something he deals with this type of injury he has. There's going to be some lingering discomfort. And he's talked about in the past dealing with these injuries and his knees a lot and legs. It's a big mental thing that he has to get used to feeling this and feel confidence in his legs. This is going to happen numerous times probably throughout the playoffs.
I have a question for you.
No. It had nothing to do about – wait, go ahead, Mo.
No. Go ahead. Talk your shit, and then I'm going to ask my question.
I was going to say, Embiid's knee had nothing to do with confidence. They gave him the best drugs possible. They made sure that he had ketamine, Toradol, whatever he weed. I don't care what he needed. He was going to get the drugs so that he did not feel that knee. I promise you.
Oh, gosh. All right. With whatever he's on, do you guys see a pathway for the 76ers coming in and tying up this to 1-1?
Yeah, definitely. A pathway for sure. This is going to be a close series.
Pathway. Yes. Yeah. It's highly unlikely in my opinion, though.
Highly unlikely.
I think this goes 6 or 7. This is going to be a very close series. You know, the adage that the whole stream is going to be revolving around is a series doesn't start until the home team loses. That's the truth for almost all these series you're watching today. The Knicks should win at home. So should Philly. Like, it's going to be close for a while. I don't think you can count either team out yet.
I think it depends, obviously, on, like, how mobile Embiid is. I think Philly, like, their pathway, the defense that they were able to play, like, they're really just going to have to do the same thing that they did in game one and say, Josh Hart, if you want to beat a shooting threes, you can, by all means, go ahead and do that. And that is a solid strategy. Like, the shots that he put up was great. I also do think, though, Jalen Brunson shot 8 of 26 in game one. And I thought that it was very clear, especially in the first half, he was forcing a lot of those shots. I don't feel like a lot of his missed shots in early in the game were because of Philly's defense. I think that he was trying to get into a rhythm.
Really?
I think that he really could have had whatever he wanted, and he just wasn't going down. But we'll see. But I do think that, like, that the shooting overall, and especially if Deuce can come out and play well, right? I don't need Deuce to score 16, 17 in the first half again. But if he could play well, then everything would be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if we look at the numbers for this game, a lot of it went kind of as you'd expect, given these teams' profiles and what led to them win, obviously. The Knicks have 55 rebounds. 55 compared to 33 for the 76ers. That's so just absurd. And we know this is what they do. They beat you up down low. The turnovers were tied. The Knicks shot 45% from three, and while the 76ers shot 34%, Knicks have 26 second-chance points compared to Philly's 8. 27 fast break points compared to Philly's 11.
Slum dog ball. That's what you call it, man.
This OD God. Physical.
This is what they do. They win on the margins. They do all the hard work stuff necessary to make up for their lack of high-end shot making. And it works consistently, especially against a team that either their star player isn't healthy, isn't the most big hustle guy, isn't the most consistent guy, whatever it may be. They have Tobias Harris on their team, which you know what that means. If you're a team like that, you're going to get outworked every single time.
Tobias Harris is the worst player to have going against the Knicks, bro. In general, over this entire season since he's been against the Knicks, he averages like 6-7 points. Last game that he played on Saturday or whenever it was, put up 7 points, bro. Atrocious efficiency. He does nothing well for them. Yeah. And I feel so sorry for Sixers fans because you have an Embiid who's just doing Embiid things, trying to be healthy. Tyrese Maxey played fantastic, did great. Kyle Lowry, same thing. But outside of that, no one really showed up and followed up. And Tobias Harris, who is, what, the second highest paid player on that team right now, for him to give you an absolute zero, is damning.
That's why me personally, I would take the crumble cookies over Tobias Harris as well. Right? I would make that trade. And I'm glad he's not. Yeah, I'm glad he's not on my team in this series.
7 field goals is not going to be enough, especially not if you're only making 3 of them. When we know Tobias doesn't bring a lot defensively, a lot on the boards, a lot passing. He has to be a scoring punch that's reliable out there to go band for band with what Jalen's going to bring. Mm-hmm. This just isn't good enough. This is just a lack of anything.
What is that? That's 1 of 4 from 3. Yeah, that's not going to cut it.
And then we look at Joel Embiid, 8 for 22 from the field. a lot of work going left here per usual around this late jump shot range here. Pretty good under the rim, but we know with his current health situation and the way Philadelphia likes to defend, I mean, the Knicks like to defend, going to be hard for him to get to the rim consistently. We'll see if those jumpers fall, because this time they didn't.
I genuinely see a pathway for the Knicks or for the Sixers to go ahead and steal a game too, because I would say for the first time this season watching Jalen Brunson, he genuinely looked uncomfortable with the type of defense that I saw Philly throwing at him. They were kind of on his back a lot. And
yeah,
I saw him go, I think he got blocked like three or four times or something like that, which is like not too often because smaller players like Jalen Brunson specifically are usually hyper aware of like where the defender is at. And to see him get blocked from behind that many times is like, huh, interesting. They're applying a lot of pressure on him in ways where he cannot really like detect and feel. And so if the Kyle Lowry's of the world again and Tyrese Maxey balls his ass off and you get whatever you can from Joel Embiid and someone else, like any human being who has the Sixers jerseys on can show up and do something, 10, 15, please, then I can imagine a world where like the Sixers steal game two for sure.
Yeah. All right, we can move on to the next series. We got a lot to get through. I'm going to go ahead. Chat, we're at 492 likes. See if y'all can get us past 500. There's 1,300 of you in here right now. I think we can do it. And I'm going to read out some of these donations in the meantime. Shout out to Quagbar for tipping $3. Said Trey Young clears Hallibum and Jalen Bumson. All right. Shout out to Kevin Galicki for donating another
Jalen Bumson? You better watch your mouth.
Kevin Galicki donated another $30. He said, I'm headed out, boys. Got a pack. Going to the Caribbean for a month for my honeymoon. Hey, listen, shout out Kevin Glick's honeymoon.
Congratulations. Oh, my goodness, bro.
I know. Shout out to Atlanta for tipping another $1. What do y'all think of my glorious goat, Naz Reid's sexy layup? I think he is also my glorious goat. I love Naz Reid so much.
Elena, we know exactly what you're talking about. And, oh, my goodness, that layup right there. When he did that, when he hit that little made me feel some type of ways all over my body. Naz Reid is just that type of player.
Shout out to Del Sol for tipping $3. Can't wait for Don's rant about Brunson being the best modern player after the Knicks win the series. He's a goat.
Oh, it's going to be great.
Next series we got to talk about. Let's see. Which one should we go to? Let's talk about the Minnesota Timberwolves versus the Phoenix Suns. I had a brain fart. Mm-hmm. How did y'all feel about this first game?
Cinema. For anyone ever pushing Anthony Edwards propaganda, this right here is like, this game right here proved every single thing that everyone has been saying in that camp. Yep. Seeing him go ban for ban with Kevin Durant and be the best player on the court when there's like a Devin Booker's and obviously KD in the world, it's phenomenal. And then also, like, we can bring it up right now too, what Rudy Gobert did on the defensive end. And also, he did hit a turnaround fadeaway bank shot too. Pretty impressive. This game was immaculate. Missile shot.
I'm not gonna lie. Well. All year, I've said, don't forget about Devin Booker when we're talking about the best shooting guards in the NBA. You know, the Anthony Edwards propaganda has been here all year. He's the chosen one. He's the new golden boy. Everyone loves him for good reason. Very cool player. Very marketable. Obviously making the leap for true superstardom as well. But, you know, Devin Booker. Better passer. Just as good of a scorer. It's like, let's not forget he's still here. Despite him not getting the headlines this year. Watching this first game, I feel like we're watching the series where we have to admit Anthony Edwards is better than Devin Booker. I feel I'm watching the ascension of a true superstar who, it looks like through one game, again, just one game, it looks like he's going to prove to be 2 years in a row a true playoff riser that rises to the occasion. We saw this Phoenix Suns team shut him the fuck down in the regular season. They game planned against him so well multiple times. He averaged 14 points per game across a full four-game series against his team. First game comes out and decimates them, drops 30 in his sleep, stares Kevin Durant in his eyes and said, this old motherfucker cannot guard me. This just feels like the Anthony Edwards moment where he's taking the leap to being a top 10 player probably.
Yeah, 100%. I'm very curious. I think for me watching this, the two things that came to mind was like, one, wow, Naz Reid is amazing. And then two, Anthony Edwards better follow this up in game two, because I think that all of us, like, we're waiting. We've all known that he can have these types of performances, and he's certainly like started off series very strong before. I want him to do this every single game, because like Isaac said, if you want to be better than Devin Booker, if you truly want to be the best shooting guard in the league, it takes consistency. It takes doing it every night in the playoffs. So You can't be out here and, you know, drop 33, shoot 58% from the field, and then next game score 20 on like 42% and have this like up and down. That's one of the reasons why I feel like coming into this, coming into the playoffs, why he already wasn't like the clear number one, because even as good as he was this year, there was still some inconsistent moments. I need him to cut that out, and then we'll be good
for sure.
This, and if he wins this series, I'm just gonna say it real quick. He is a top 10 player in the NBA. He will be entering next season viewed as that. He should be.
Yeah, he'll be in that running for sure. He'll definitely be in that range. Mo, one thing you've talked about a lot with Anthony Edwards this year is his lack of consistency from the mid-range jumper. Early in the season when he was on fire, we saw it falling. And we're like, Jesus Christ, how do you guard this guy? Then he went through mid-season and it was under a big slump. There was a stretch where he was one of the worst jump shooters in the league. It got better in the second half of the season, but was very inconsistent to Donovan's point. In this game, looking at the shot chart, mid-range mastery. Just look at this area. Him getting to a spot on the left side of the court, just nailing it every single time. Obviously, the 3 points were falling. We know what he can do driving to the rim against a team that is a pretty good defensive team. They've been around 9th or 10th on defense for the entire season. Nurkic isn't the best rim stopper in the NBA, but he's not a pushover. He's given them a decent rim defense. It's impressive. He's getting to his spots, rising however he wants, doing whatever he wants, being the most athletic player on the court, the most skilled offensive player on the Timberwolves, doing everything you'd want from him. And on top of that, Cat. Let's talk about Cat real quick.
Oh my goodness.
Because we all, in our predictions episode, we trepidatiously thought the Suns have a good chance of upsetting here, in big part because we didn't know what we're going to get a Cat, who only played 2 games before the playoffs started. From what I saw from Cat in this first game, I have no problem thinking the Timberwolves are going to win this handily if he keeps playing like this, because he looked great offensively and defensively. He switched on the perimeter really well, chasing around the wings on the Suns, wasn't getting exposed in space whatsoever, did all the offensive stuff you'd want him to do down low, using his size to the advantage. I'm confident in this team if Cat plays like this for the whole series.
Like, to win the series or to do more beyond the series?
Both. I mean, I don't know. I forget who they're going to match up with in the second round, but if they handily win this series, I don't think they're going to get pushed over in the second round by any means.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Man. I feel like at this point in time for Cat, before this, when he came back from his injury, he looked like shit. He didn't look good at all. But at the same time, all Minnesota fans and NBA fans, you know, were just happy that his presence was felt, and no real expectation or pressure is on him no longer. Not only because of the injury, but even like where he stands on the team and shit like that, because everybody understands what Cat is and how at times still awkward his fit is on that roster. Yeah. And so to see him just smoothly integrate himself while someone like Anthony Edwards continues to grow and blossom and it's opening up the game in a myriad of ways just helps everyone get in their spots so much easier.
Mm-hmm. Chat's going crazy laughing at me saying trepidatious, saying it's the big word of the day. Call me an unk.
I love it. Read a book.
How do you feel about this? I'm not ready to write off the Suns yet, though. You know, we were both confident that they have some matchup advantage that can make them win the series. I still feel that way. Like I said about the last series doesn't start until somebody loses at home. Are you still confident in the Suns?
No. I mean, I picked the Timberwolves to win the series.
Did you?
And so, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, how do you feel about the Suns?
Probably it's still about the same. I think I was still iffy on Cat, like, just because I am generally about how he's going to perform, you know, in a playoff setting. And so if he's going to come out here and, in my eyes, elevate himself from what he normally is, and Anthony Edwards is going to play to the level that he did, I don't think that there's any way that the Suns can win this series. Unless you get one of those moments where Devin Booker shoots, you know, 60%, Kevin Durant goes crazy, Bradley Beal starts to you know, go wild as well. But all three of them clicking, it's going to be wild. I don't see it really happening. But the perimeter defense that Minnesota has, and the now at like elevated shot making from their two stars, I think that's my overreaction. Where I think this series is over, I think it's a wrap.
Yeah, I can't write the Suns off just because they're such an inconsistent team. In that, like game one, they look rather lifeless and just get dominated in basically all physical aspects you could imagine, and just get pretty much punked out the building. But then the next night, they come out, and the shot-making really shines. You see the true formula of what was expected with these guys. That's going to happen. I think we're going to see some Suns games like we saw in the late half of the season when Bradley Beal was really cooking, where, like you said, what we saw last year when they Kevin Durant and Booker were clicking, Bulls dropping 40. We're going to see a little bit of that, I think. I don't think we can assume that it's going to go perfect for the Timberwolves every single game.
Yeah, they won't sweep them, but
they might win five? One.
Yeah, five?
I wouldn't even say five. I think initially coming into the series.
A pesky six?
Did you predict the Suns winning this, Isaac, or what?
No, I think we talked. No, I was like, it's going to go late. I was like, I think I said Suns in seven, actually. I think at the end when we talked through it, I don't remember. Every time we do these predictions, we record it like 4 days or so before the series starts. I change my mind so motherfucking much with all these series nonstop. So I don't know what I actually said on the stream, but I think I leaned like Suns in seven. Because I didn't know what I was getting another cap.
I know you had tweeted about it. I know you tweeted your
prediction. Yeah, when I tweeted it, I just said, I don't fucking know for who's going to win the series. Because I do not have a confident prediction. I don't have a confident prediction whatsoever.
That's fair. That's fair. I don't even remember any of my predictions as well. But I do feel like I said the Suns. I would lean the Suns away because it just seemed like they had the Timberwolves number. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to like run away from that still, but I just don't imagine a world in where like Devin Booker shoots like 31% from the field again, like consecutively. I have to assume that Grayson Allen's going to come, not to say he's a huge X factor, but he fucking matters.
I mean, he is.
Specifically speaking, the best shooter in the NBA, and he matters. He's injured, I think, but I think he's probably going to play Tuesday or whenever their next game is. So yeah, I have to assume that they're going to come back, punch them back in their mouth, and this would be like probably like a 7-game series for sure.
Yeah, again, it's nowhere near done yet. The home team won game one, as expected. But again, won by 25. We're looking at the stats right now. 52 rebounds and 20 second chance points for Minnesota. That has to be cleaned up. We have to see. The Suns have to figure out a way to play with size and not get completely decimated that way while still maintaining the perimeter advantages they have with the shot making. But then again, they shot 32% from three. And every game we look at, we're going to realize that a running theme here is when you're playing with really close teams and really close matchups, whoever makes the most threes typically decides a big portion of these games. We saw the Magic look like shit offensively. They shot like fucking 20% from three. We saw the Mavs get ran out in the first half. They shot 12% from three in the first half. Three-point shot variance is a big part of all these series. So until we get a little bit more and see what happens when the Suns actually make their threes for a game, and maybe vice versa, the Timberwolves go cold, hard to really learn anything yet.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, what's the next series?
Stick out East. Okay, let's real quick gloss over Celtics versus Heat. What do you guys think?
Drew Holiday, you're a very dangerous man for pushing Caleb Martin like that. Next.
This is going to be a sweep, I think. I think just without Jimmy, they just don't have, as expected, right? We all said the Celtics are going to barrel through. It's going to be as expected and an easy sweep for the Celtics, I think.
I didn't even realize that like Duncan Robinson wasn't playing, and also I know Terry Rozier was out, but I didn't realize how like battered they were in like injury wise. It was crazy. So yeah, they're getting swept.
Yeah, and I wish I had more to say and to give the Heat and Celtics fans their time, but what do you want us to say? The Celtics are the best team in the conference by a wide margin, playing the weakest team in the playoffs right now on that side.
Yeah, what do you expect to happen? And the Miami Heat are missing like three out of their best seven, eight players, so it's like. Tough luck, buddy.
Let's talk about the most painful series for me. Lakers versus Nuggets. The Lakers played a very solid game in game one, besides D'Lo being absolutely useless in the playoffs, per usual. Outside of that, Anthony Davis played 45 minutes and played exceptional. He, great offensively, great defensively, went bam for bam with Jokic. Played just as good. LeBron was LeBron. Jamal Murray was cold. Nuggets played regular-ass basketball. And for the first half, the Lakers looked like they were going to steal game one. And then the Nuggets just did Nuggets things and came out and out-executed the shit out of them in the third quarter, blew the game open, and ended up winning the game by 11 points. Just everything we knew coming into the series, that the Lakers are a good team, playing well on both sides of the ball for the most part, very much could make a deep run if the matchup broke the right way. It broke the worst way possible. They have nothing for this team. The Nuggets are perfectly suited personnel-wise to out-execute them in every single way, to take advantage of all the Lakers' weaknesses and use all their strengths to the greatest degree because the Lakers can't stop them in any way. They stand no chance.
Congratulations. Anthony Davis played just as good as Jokic, but he didn't play better.
to no avail. To no fucking avail. If they can't win this game, they're probably not going to win many of them.
No, they're not. Well. They're not. Watching the Nuggets, watching them, I get the same feeling watching them as I did watching like Prime Warriors, mm-hmm. where anything can happen in the first half, minus them being down like 25 points. And even then, you still are kind of like, okay. Yeah. But if the game is like, you know, 10, 12 points either way, you get to the third quarter and it's like, okay, it's time for them to turn up. And then they're going to hit their run. They're going to blow the game open. They're going to lock in. And you're going to look up and all of a sudden a 12-point lead is now you're down by one. Or, you know, a tie game, you look up, now you're down 16. And you're like, what just happened? And I don't know if there's – especially if D'Angelo Russell keeps shooting the way that he does, there's no way that the Lakers are going to win this game. The series. And the only reason why you kind of felt that they had a chance was because D'Lo was playing so well coming into the playoffs. And you just didn't think that he would be as bad. And then he's like, wait for it. I can do it. Like, I can play as bad as I did last year.
And every time we think he's done shitting his pants, he finds a new way to defecate. It's no matter what, D'Lo's going to do playoff D'Lo things.
He finds ways to be shit. That's hilarious, bro.
He finds ways to shit and fart no matter what.
You can't call yourself like a offensive-driven team and then have a starter go ahead and put up 7 points, have another starter go ahead and shoot 6 for 20 from the field, and then everyone else be like, you know, yeah, okay, cool. AD showed up, and Austin Reeves did his thing. Of course, LeBron did LeBron things. But all these other pieces, all eyes are on you. Rui Hachimura has to, like, you know, snap out of it and snap into it and fucking be what he was last year. I just feel so sad for you guys, man. It's just like when I think of this series, I just think it's like cruelty. It's like a fat – you know, I don't know where this idea came from. I think it was on some old movie or whatever, but I just – see like a fat kid running on a treadmill with someone chasing a donut in front of him. It's like, hey, you're almost there. Whoop. It's just like, it's cruel, man.
That's a crazy visual. But yeah, it's just nothing matters. I'll pull up the stats here. We'll look at the distribution of everything.
Ain't no stats. they're just not as good. And unless LeBron is going to be Superman all four quarters, it's also not going to happen. And At this stage in his career, to ask him every game in the first round, hey, we're going to need you to play massive minutes and to go, like, you know, try hard mode for 30, 40 minutes, that's too much to ask of him. He can't do it at this point.
Yep. This is the third. Listen, I pulled up three team comparisons here for three games. Every single time the winning team shoots better from three, has more second chance points, more rebounds, more fast break points. That's three in a row. That's what these all come down to. They're beating them in all the important categories. And this is not going to change between these two teams. These are things the Denver Nuggets excel at. And the Lakers are inconsistent as hell at. I don't think I have much to say. They're outclassed in every way.
What an ugly color selection.
Yeah, it is blue. Like I'm watching the Charlotte Hornets or something.
This isn't even the Nuggets color. This was their colors in the 2000s. Why is this light blue?
That's what I'm saying. Why is it there? Like, the Lakers should clearly be like a yellow, and then you get the Nuggets on like a darker blue or something.
Or make the Nuggets red. Like, why is it this light blue? This isn't even one of their colors at all.
I'm trying to get someone fired today. Oh my goodness. On a Monday?
Not fired. Not fired.
Let me get some donations before we move on. We don't have talking to. Shout out to MC Cray for tipping $5. Said, hey, fellas, first time, long time. Question here, Donovan. How do we stop James Harden? It's not good for our anti-Clippers narrative.
Brother, we don't have to do anything. We just have to sit back and let James Harden stop himself. I promise you it's going to happen. It's going to happen.
Game one, James Harden's different, bro.
We'll talk about that series next. We'll get over to that. Shout out to Del Sol for tipping $3. Said, with his performance, do you guys see Naz Reid permanently taking the starting spot from Kat and Kat getting traded? Not because of Nazir's performance, but if the team doesn't win big in this playoffs, they might have to do it for financial reasons, and it would make sense to see Nazir slide into that spot. But it wouldn't be taking the spot from Kat unless they have to move off him for money.
Yeah.
Yeah, Nazir's not going to be the sole reason.
Yeah. At all. Shout out to Nuggets and Four for tipping $3. He said, waiting for the Nuggets versus Celtics finals. Me too. Shout out to DQ Senpai for tipping $5. He said, do y'all think this Harden's one good game at the playoffs? I don't know about one, but it's one of very few, probably.
He might have two. In terms of, we'll save. I'll save for Clippers talk.
You know, Clippers talk is now. Go ahead. Let it fly.
Wait. Real quick. One quick question before we move on to Clippers talk. I saw this interesting tweet, and I was like, I wonder what the guys are thinking about on the podcast. If Nikola Jokic wins another NBA championship, does that put him ahead of Steph Curry in the all-time rankings?
No.
Puts him neck and neck. Steph Curry's probably like 10 or 11. Jokic will be in that low teens range pretty fast, so I wouldn't say ahead, but he'll be close.
That's what I'm saying. Like, let's pump the brakes. Like, come on, guys.
It can put him in the same stratosphere for sure, because assuming he continues to do his thing for the rest of the prime and doesn't have like a short longevity, but Steph also has, you know, MVPs and four rings, so if anything, it'll just put him in the same conversations, I think.
Gotcha.
But Steph will still be ahead. You know, four championships is a lot. Steph does have more longevity, but also three MVPs is more than two. Jokic isn't anywhere near done, so we'll see.
It's a long conversation. I just thought it was interesting.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Mavericks versus Clippers game. I was there in person, watching from in the arena. I thought I was going to get a Luka Doncic masterclass. I thought I was going to get the hottest team in the NBA.
Is this the second time you've been scammed yet? Since you've been to the Clippers?
Yes. The first time I saw them early in the season for Wemby's fourth game of his career, and he also defecated his pants. It was a terrible, Wemby's worst game of the season. Every time I see the Clippers, they're on one. They're on fire. They can't lose. So I guess I'm their good luck charm.
Don't go to Clippers games no more. That's what needs to happen. Next time you tell me you're going to a Clippers game, sniping out your tires.
But this is an interesting game. We all picked the Mavericks to win. You guys were extremely confident in the Mavs to win. I said Mavs in seven. That I don't really feel that strongly about it because we're sleeping on the Clippers because they had a slow second half of the season. And the whole reason I said that, why we should be careful about expecting the Mavs to just continue their dominance, is because of Ty Lue. And this is a team that, even without Kawhi Leonard, is incredibly disciplined and incredibly smart because Ty Lue knows how to game plan, knows how to install an offense that isn't super reliant on Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, or James Harden. And Jason Kidd is not particularly smart at being a coach. Is not a high-level X's and O's guy by any means. You know, it's not a comparison when we're talking about him versus Ty Lue. And that's exactly what we saw play out in this game. The level of preparation that Ty Lue brought versus what Jason Kidd did was night and fucking day. It looked like Jason Kidd was doing the same stuff they're doing in the regular season. They were doing the same aggressive-ass defense, throwing help at the nail every single time Luka Doncic is in action to not let him get exposed, leaving corner shooters open and rotating behind it against a team in the Clippers whose entire offensive philosophy is swinging the ball around the perimeter and finding open shooters. He gave them exactly what they wanted, and James Harden threw dimes to the corner. They rained threes on top of them. The Mavs' offense was anemic. It was awful. How do y'all feel about this series?
I'll say this. I didn't learn a damn thing from game one. I don't care about it. It's the Mavs in six. I will tell you that right now.
Yeah.
It's like, obviously, everything, like the Ty Lue coaching point is 100% valid. And everything that you said is true. I also will throw everything out the window because they shot 11% from three in the first half. They were 2 of 18 from three in the first half. I can't reasonably look at the game and look at everything that happened, especially from halftime on, and be like, okay, this is what like the Mavs were doing. This is what's happening. But there's a couple things that I took away from it, which was one, I'm glad that James Harden had a good game now. Because that means that when we get to games 5, 6, and 7, he's going to be due for the bad games, right? He's going to let the Clippers down. Love that. Two, didn't love the body language from Luka. Felt like there was like the play where he was like, he had the little slip pass to Maxi Kleber. He missed it. All of a sudden, he's jumping up and down, yelling at him, berating him on the court. Didn't love that. But like when you're down 30, I get it. But they're going to be okay. They're going to be fine. I feel like even early on in the game, I thought that Luka was still able to get to his spots, and some of the shots just weren't going in. And a lot of times in these blowout games, you'll see star players on the losing team still be able to get to their spot, get their shots up, and the shots just don't fall. And it can snowball very quickly.
Yep.
And the game gets out of hand. And I felt kind of the same way in the Indiana Milwaukee game, where a couple missed shots, right? Threes don't go down. And on the other side, somebody makes one three, and all of a sudden, instead of you cutting the lead to two, now it's like an 8-point game or something like that. It's the swings are crazy in the playoffs, so it's gonna be okay.
Yeah. I agree. It's still Mavs in seven, but I think they have some stuff they have to address in game two, or else I'll start getting worried. What are you saying, Mo?
For sure. I agree. Basketball is just a game of runs, and whoever gets the more runs off ends up winning. And, you know, the Clippers have a lot of things going right their way. Like you said, they have Ty Lue as their head coach, Jason Kidd just happens to be standing on the opposite side. Congratulations for them. And I don't know. It just feels like this win for the Clippers is one of the few that they'll be able to get because of just unforeseen circumstances. Which is like, you know, just have one of the best offenses in the entire NBA having one of the worst nights of their entire season. And then on top of that, too, like Luka starts off super slow in the first half. He was one of the main drivers for that. And we were able to see like Kyrie have an insane, absolutely ridiculous third quarter. I don't think he missed a shot. I think he scored like 20 points or something absurd like that. So I see this game. I wouldn't necessarily worry at all, and I think hopefully, you know, Jason Kidd will make those adjustments when it comes to figuring out how to make Daniel Gafford less, you know, brutal going up against Zubac and shit.
Yeah, part of it was they were just missing threes, but there was more to it. One, Zubac immediately asserted dominance. Like you said, Gafford couldn't hang with him at all. Lively did a better job, but it was very much one team had the interior advantage, and I don't know if they can stop Ty Lue from really attacking Luka defensively and really doing mismatch hunting. That's something that they really had to struggle with. They gave Luka too much help, which you can't do when your James Harden is running the team instead of Kawhi, because James Harden is going to swing into the shooters every single time. So they have to think of a different type of defense to run, because you're not going to have that much luck giving that much help interior. Because they sold out to stop the driving lanes when the ball handlers on this team are James Harden, Paul George, Norm Powell, Terrence Mann. Not particularly effective drivers to the rim. These guys aren't the most athletic, beat you one-on-one guys. I just don't understand what Jason Kidd's entire game plan was. It has to change.
He was just trying to be aggressive. That's it. Like, he was trying. I feel like they had an opportunity where Kawhi wasn't out, and you are going to stick with everything that's gotten you to this point and really try to, you know, mask all of Luka's deficiencies so that he can go back on the other end and give you an efficient, you know, 37, 12, and 10. And you kind of, if Luka is your star and you know that, like, you're going to get into series like this, you're just going to have to live with stuff like that. And it's kind of like with, you know, what we used to see with Steph Curry. Like, you'd go at Steph and you try to make him work, try to tire him out. But you're okay because you know that on the opposite end, he's going to give you 30 points in the most efficient way. And I just don't. I ultimately think that the Mavs are going to be okay. I think that Luka has shown time and time again his ability to torch the Clippers, regardless of who's guarding him. And I think that offensively, especially if they start faster, they're going to be okay. But I am with you that I'm very curious to see how Zubac comes out in the second, in the following games, because if he's hooping like that, then it's like, all right, we can't really do anything.
Clippers have a chance, bro. I'm sticking with Mavs in seven, but the Clippers have a real chance. The Clippers are good. Like, Kawhi isn't there. We don't know if he's going to come back. Regardless, this team is good, and we can't write them off too much. But the one thing I will say, we can't. I saw somebody tweet, I forget who. You can't overreact to an old legend player having a week off of rest and then looking really good in the game one. Kyle Lowry, James Harden. It happens. That's why James Harden's always good in game one, because he has a week off and has fresh legs. If Kawhi doesn't come back and James Harden's relied upon for a full 7-game series, that's where the Mavs can benefit in the long run. But we can't rob the Clippers. It's not going to be easy by any means with or without Kawhi. The Clippers are good and a really smart team and aren't a pushover at all.
When Daniel Gafford came on during the post game conference and opened his mouth. He was like, I just felt like I was unprepared. Yeah. All that 110% leans back on the coaching staff, because none of your players should ever feel like they're unprepared. That's why you're there. You're there to boost them up and help them keep their head on the swivel when it comes to scouting reports and all this type of shit. So hopefully all those things will be addressed, and I think we will be back right on track, Donovan.
100%. They're not winning this series. I still have very high faith in the Mavs.
Yeah, you're super confident. What did you say? You say Mavs in five? Is that what your prediction was?
No, I think – I may have said Mavs in five. I honestly thought Mavs in six. Yeah.
No, yeah. Okay. Anybody who hears our predictions, so many times people take things literally where Mavs in five, like he's just saying it to be an asshole, but it's in jest, yeah. You know? People take us so literally. I'm like, well, do you guys understand that we are never that serious?
Especially when it comes to the Clippers. Like, the Mavs could only have Luka. They could not have Kyrie, and I still be like, nah, they're winning it in four. Like,
But no, I do think legitimately it's going seven, which yeah. I'm picking Mavs in seven, which means I think the Mavs are better. But if you're going seven, it can go either way. So I would not be shocked at all if the Clippers surprise the world.
Okay. That's fair.
Let's talk about another series. OKC versus the New Orleans Pelicans.
This might be the best series of the first round.
Okay.
It might be.
This is the series. I just said when we're talking about predictions, take it in jest. A lot of times we're joking. I'm never joking when I'm talking about the Thunder. All year I've told you guys how confident I am in them and how we need to stop pretending that they're just scrubs because they're young and that J-Dub's a star and Chet Holmgren is incredibly good, better than a lot of your favorite centers. I feel so much pressure for this team to not lose in the first round or I'm going to lose this fuck. I was clinching.
Isaac Gutierrez, oh, congratulations. Your legacy is on the line. Fuck the fuck Mark Dagnall. No one cares about Shea. It's about you and what you've been feeding into my ears.
I've given so much Thunder propaganda. They cannot lose in the first round. I don't think they will. I think we saw it. Get the Pelicans aren't going to win this game when they hold the Thunder offense to being this terrible. It's going to be hard for them to find a way to win because this was a really bad showing from the Thunder offense.
Yeah, and they had the Pelicans had so many opportunities at the end of the game to go out and win the game, right? Like you had that final possession where they get three offensive rebounds and they don't get a good look on any one of them. Mm-hmm. And even on the last play of the game, CJ McCollum, he gets thrown it out of rhythm because Casey Wallace comes in, clamps, you know what I'm saying, locks him up, posts the ball away, and now you get a double clutch leaning three for the win. I think that like For Shea and for J Dub, they're gonna be fine. Like their ability to make shots in the clutch is so. I think that's gonna be the difference, and yeah. you really really saw it in this game because Brandon Ingram and CJ, they couldn't get to their spots late in the game. They couldn't knock stuff down. Whereas even when they were missing, I still felt like Shea and J Dub got to their spots and were getting certain shots that they normally take. It was just a matter of the stuff not falling. But the Thunder are going to be okay. But I do think that this kind of wraps up fairly quickly.
Really?
To be honest, I think it's going to be a fun series, and it might ultimately be the most fun series in the first round. But the Thunder execute at a very, very high level, especially down the stretch in these games. And if Zion, he has a hamstring injury, but I have no idea what his status is. He'll be back
by next week.
It's a hamstring for a defensive lineman. Like, I think
we can assume Zion won't be here for this series.
Exactly. I like OKC. I think that they win this. This is a real prediction at this point. I think that they win this series in five.
I hope so. I agree too. OKC needs the rest for the next series. The next series is going to be tough. They're going to face a team that has some size next. Mm-hmm. And Mo, how did you feel about OKC's size? Because obviously, you know, the rebounding's been a big issue. Or is there one weakness, really? Jonas Valanciunas is a big motherfucker. How'd you feel watching that? Were you worried about that long term?
Oh, yeah. That's one thing that I've been saying to you guys for the entirety of the regular season when it comes to what they do in the playoffs. We've seen Jonas Valanciunas. We saw him collect 20 rebounds. And I think the Pelicans had like a 12 rebound lead or whatever over OKC. And obviously like that was like the biggest thing that helped keep the New Orleans Pelicans in this game. Now, also with that being said, that didn't end up mattering because of what guys like Chet Holmgren was able to provide with his fucking shot blocking. He swatted so many clutch and key buckets. There's one book, I believe it was towards the end of the fourth quarter, where Larry Nance Jr. was trying to do an up and under move, and Chet just came out of nowhere and stretched his hands like fucking 12 feet in the sky and just swatted it into oblivion. You know, yeah. Like with OKC being damn near perfect on all other ends on the court, as much as perfect as they can be, it almost doesn't matter just yet for them when it comes to the rebounding and the nitty gritty stuff.
Yeah. We saw the game come down to what both you guys are saying. Last possession, Chet had a clutch block followed up by a clutch Shea shot. Also, some big offensive rebounds by the Pelicans, which can spell the potential doom of them in a later series. We just saw everything you would expect besides the fact that OKC shot 30% from three. The best three-point shooting team in the NBA, them and the Celtics. So that's due for some positive regression. They're not going to shoot that bad every game. Part of it was probably a young team in their first playoff game ever, some jitters there that led to some cold shooting. Part of it is the fact that Trey Murphy and Herb Jones are fucking gods on the perimeter. They're ridiculous. Shooting against them would give me nightmares. But you can assume they're going to shoot a little better.
Yeah.
Don, what are you laughing at?
I think I got to say it.
Yeah, you got to say it. You got to say it, man.
If you're reading this, you guys need to have more shame. Okay?
What do you see?
Wayne Like Water, it says YouTube name, says, Mo eat fried chicken like you're in danger.
Oh, if you're in danger. They've been saying that in chat all day. I'm cracking up. They're like, Mo, blink twice if you're in danger.
I'm cracking up.
Have
so shame.
Shout out to MC Cray for donating another $5. Shout out to VM for tipping $3. Mr. Thomas Snatch for tipping $3. And Del Sol for tipping $40. I missed that one. Sorry, Del Sol. He said, give Don the ISO cam. I need to hear generational Clippers rant for the stream. We appreciate you, man. And shout out to Nick for tipping $5.
Wait until they lose. And I promise you, I got you.
Something I will say to touch real quick back on the Pelicans. Zion Williamson, he's supposed to be cleared by May 1st, which leans around like game 5, game 6 of that series. And so if there is a world in where the Pelicans just fucking take one, then I don't want to say the series becomes unpredictable, but that's how I can see it like being extra drawn out, obviously.
Yeah, but that's when he's clear for contact for the first time, if it goes as well as possible. Still, that's not necessarily when people can come back and play immediately. So it would be kind of crazy if they threw him back out there for a game 7 with that short return around. I felt like unless he looks great, awesome. We're obviously not in the medical team there.
Yeah.
That seems like that could get a little irresponsible if things don't break right.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see.
Fuck that. Just hop on that goddamn court, Zion. See him drop 40 on LeBron. Come do it, bro.
Also, J-Dub is very much ready for the playoffs. Did you guys see him barking at Jonas Valanciunas?
Yeah, that was great.
He's fantastic. He is him. I love J-Dub. Barking at your competition is great.
What do you do if another grown man just starts barking at you while you're playing basketball? What is your immediate reaction, Isaac? You gonna bark back?
I'm not, listen, towards the end of that game when the Thunder started making plays, I did start barking in my living room. I was watching them. And
how are you
I
barking? Started. What did it sound like?
So Rottweiler bark, goddamn.
Yeah, man. I'm feeling Thunder in 5 too. I can only hope.
Yeah.
Oh my
God. Also, real quick, shout out Trey Murphy, man. Trey Murphy was hooping.
Ooh, he was hooping.
That.
He was hooping.
Send Brandon Ingram to Atlanta. Trey Murphy needs to be the starting forward next to Zion Williamson. Him and Herb Jones have to be the nucleus there with Zion.
Too much energy towards Brandon Ingram right now needs to be towards fucking CJ McCollum. Send him anywhere. Make him an accountant. Send him to where Sharif Cooper is playing, bro. Doesn't fucking matter.
So much is asked of him, though. Like, it's so hard for him. He has to do everything as a lead point guard. He's overtaxed.
He has to do everything, but yet he doesn't do as much well. Like, what the fuck? He didn't exceed at something. Please. Shoot. Rebound. Pass. Something. I need it. Damn.
Shout out to Holden. I'm not going to say his full name because he's trying to get me for tipping $3. He says, can you shout out my wife? Thanks. Shout out to your wife, Holden. You thought he would get me.
You almost got caught.
No, nope, never.
Yo, CJ's in year 12? It's kind of crazy.
Man's been around the block.
Wow.
A team who hasn't been around the block is the Orlando Magic, who lost game one to the Cleveland Cavaliers. How do you guys feel about this? Because the Cleveland Cavaliers are a team that I was high on early in the season. I've loved them since last year, but they looked really terrible in the second half with Donovan Mitchell not being healthy, Evan Mobley not having the strongest second half of the season, Darius Garland not having the strongest second half of the season, and the Orlando Magic had tons of momentum. Last week when we did the predictions, Mo, I don't remember what you thought. Donovan, you were very confident in the Magic. I was on the fence, but I was able to be convinced in the Magic just because I was so uncertain about what the Cavs had shown us as of late. But I said, I can see the Magic winning. It comes down to, do we get vintage playoff Donovan Mitchell giving a strong run? If they do and you see 30-point per game D-Mitch, the Cavs got it. If not, I think they're in danger of the Mavs out-physicaling them. We got 30-point per game Donovan Mitchell. We got Evan Mobley hitting threes, locking down everything. And the Orlando Magic shooting 21% from three, looking like a middle school offense. If it looks like this for any more games in the series, the Magic might get swept.
I saw Evan Mobley hitting a couple of threes against the Washington Wizards in spring, and y'all laughed at me. He is so fucking back. He is going to beat those Derek Favors allegations.
Okay.
Something else that I will also say is that, yo, Donovan Mitchell is so much better than the next best player on both series, on either team. And I think that reason alone will be the reason why, like, they should win this series and no more than six.
Yeah, listen. They shot 26% from three while the Magic shot 21% from three. This was a fucking rock fight. It was embarrassing. And the difference was Donovan Mitchell can get his bucket for himself at any time, give you 30, while Paolo Banchero had no spacing around him. Jalen Suggs, wide open. Franz, wide open. Jonathan Isaac, wide open. All missing threes. Banchero performed really well as a scorer, but had 4 assists and 7 turnovers. He could do nothing on the pick and roll. He couldn't start offense for other people whatsoever. If this is going to be that type of problem and the offense is going to be that terrible, they have zero chance to win any games. But granted, it's just one game. They should shoot better than 21% from three. But they have to be dramatically better in game two.
Yeah. I don't know. And I'm looking... Looking right at Franz Wagner. Looking right at you, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Trash. Oh my goodness. He was not good. He was not good in game one. I still feel confident about the Magic to win this series.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, no. Confident, no.
But how could you feel confident?
I'm not confident. But I do still think that they will win this series. Just because think about, like, as bad as the Magic played and as good as Cleveland played, the Cavs didn't score 100 points, right? They came out of the gate and they hit their first 5 threes. They were firing on all cylinders. Donovan Mitchell was taking these crazy, you know, step back heaves. Threes were going in, and they scored 33 points in the first quarter. Next three quarters, they scored 20, 20, and 24. There were several times in that game where the defense for Orlando showed up. Jalen Suggs was a problem for Darius Garland, for Donovan Mitchell. He was getting into their space. He was causing a lot of deflections. And I think defensively, Orlando is going to be fine. I think it's kind of the same thing as with some of these other teams where you come out, the nerves kind of got you. Jalen Suggs talked about how he was really, really nervous. You just can't fall behind by 15 in a series like this. And it might be hard because of the shooting. And I know that it's bad, but I still think that their defense is going to be able to prevail, because in a lot of the moments that were like physical moments, playoff moments type stuff, yo, the Magic were, they were bodying Cleveland. Like they were punking them in those types of moments. I think that really can show up for the rest of the series. So I'm still picking them to win.
Okay. It's, again, I've said it about all these series,
but I respect it.
This amongst all these series, this is the one that will most specifically come down to who makes the most threes every game. Because you got guys like Mobley out there, Franz, Suggs, Jared Allen, even Isaac Okoro. It's going to be these elite, smart defensive coaches begging role players to beat each other. And that's going to be the swing factors, is which role players can make the most shots. And I don't know if I can pick the Magic to win that type of game. Because what other way do you see them having a huge advantage when all the strengths they have defensively, the Cavs also excel in those areas. They also have the defensive talents of Evan Mobley to go band for band with the John Isaac. they have Donovan Mitchell to go band for band with the Paolo Banchero. You know, like, all the reasons that we could feel confident about the Magic, I feel like we can also feel confident for the Cavs. And if it becomes a shootout, it's just, I think there's a clear advantage there.
Yes. Okay. On Evan Mobley, he did play well. It's not act like he was freaking Tim Duncan. Like, he scored 16. Like, he was good, right? He was fine. And a lot of times, and we'll see what Orlando does, because there was like three or four plays where they just, like, he was scoring on Cole Anthony, right? So he's not going out and creating in the same way that Paolo is, or, you know,
but that's the thing,
that
though.
That he mentions. I get it, but like,
he has to be able to attack those guards and beat those mismatches, which he did. Normally he can't. Normally he sucks at that.
I get it. It's one game from Evan Mobley, and I want to see more. Right. I think there's going to be just a little bit of regression from Evan Mobley, and I refuse to believe, and this is probably just my bias, I refuse to believe that Franz Wagner, shooting aside, like three-point shooting aside, is going to be as bad as he was in game one.
Hold on, they're calling me old in the chat and giving hilarious jokes. You want to hear some of these?
Please.
They said my parents are Adam and Eve.
Oh no, that's crazy.
That's good. They
said, I founded First National Bank. They said, I wrote the Declaration of Independence, so Hamilton took credit. I've been having hot takes since the ABA. I was George Washington's gardener. That was just racist.
For what?
I'm one of the founding fathers.
That's a layer joke. God. That's a layer joke.
Ooh. Ooh. He said my social security number is 1. That was good. They saw me in Red Dead Redemption 2. I threw tea in Boston.
Oh my god.
All right, Benbo, you have any parting thoughts about this series?
Nah, man. Rock fight continues. I'm going to lean towards Donovan Mitchell's way because he's by far, in a way, the best player in this series. So, yeah, I'm going Cavs still.
Mm. All right, cool.
And what's the last series?
We got to talk about the Milwaukee Bucks and the Indiana Pacers. Good God, what a game, bro. We saw Damian Lillard go on a fucking heater during the first half of this game.
No. Yeah. Not for the first half. For the first quarter. And then he didn't score again.
It was the first half.
I believe I picked the Bucks to win the series. Yes. Which one of you picked the Pacers? Was it you, Donovan?
Of course.
Of course, you're out of here.
Pacers are so unserious. The Pacers are so fucking unserious. I'm so glad I didn't get fooled to pick them.
Dude, Tyrese, Rick Carlisle.
You're letting me down.
Rick Carlisle played 11 people in this game.
In the first quarter, he played 10 people. He does not have
2015 Warriors depth. What the fuck is he doing playing Jalen Smith in a playoff game?
What is Sticks doing?
You're down 16. You're down 16. And 2 minutes have passed. You're down 16. Somebody else get in here. I have to try something else. Like, I get it.
Try Jalen Smith?
Who else? Who else? You're down 16 in 2 minutes.
Yeah, but you're down 16 in a historic way, though. It's not like you're just down 16 off of, like, fucking players just straight up not trying.
Somebody go do something. Clearly, Tyrese doesn't want to be out here. He took, like, 5 shots in the first 3 quarters. Like, yo, I don't care. I really don't. Tyrese, I don't care if they are falling. If we are down 20 and you are the best player on the team, you better chuck up these shots. Like, I can't leave these games with Pascal coming to hoop and you not having 10 shot attempts. I can't leave these games with Nembhard and TJ McConnell, like, taking these shots. You have to be the driving force in a lot of this. And when you were at your best and when this team was at their best, Tyrese Haliburton was an insane, high volume, high efficient scorer.
Yep.
And he was
specific.
And he did not even attempt to be that kind of player in game one. Meanwhile, Damian Lillard on the other side is like, oh yeah, 35 feet, light work, right? I'm taking step backs from 40 feet and they're going in at the end of the quarter and there's nothing you can do. And that was just such a stark difference at the start of this game where you saw, oh, it's it's over. Like Dame's here to play. Tyrese doesn't look like he wants to be out here. And so I will see you guys in game two. But he needs to be more aggressive.
They got punched in their fucking mouth. They weren't ready for the Bucks to be this locked in defensively. They thought the Bucks were going to be this defensive pushover. They've been for the regular season. And granted, it's just the Pacers, so I won't be taking any victory laps because, like I said, the Pacers are unserious as fuck. But I am confident the Bucks can continue to ramp up defensively when needed, like we see today. Playoff atmosphere is very different. We know the defensive issues. We know how bad it can get. It's going to be better when you have the talent they have. And this is, Giannis wasn't even playing. But when you have Brooke Lopez, yeah, you have some versatility in the perimeter, not like it used to be with Jrue Holiday, they're not going to look that easy of a fucking bucket every single time like they did in the regular season. And the Pacers must have thought they would be, because they thought they were going to run up and down, do their track field stuff where they come up and play no defense but shoot hella threes. That's not how playoff basketball is played. And they have to make serious adjustments in a way that I don't think they can, because I think Tyrese's style of play is run up and down, play no defense, get shots up, and that doesn't work when they're punching you in the mouth every time you come down the half court.
Goddamn. And on the other side of things, this is why the Milwaukee Bucks gave up everything for someone like Damian Lillard. I don't know. I'm not going to say I don't know. Jrue Holiday does not have the capabilities of giving this type of ceiling to where if your best player is out for the series, Giannis, this guy can potentially lead me to a first-round victory with everyone else healthy around him. That's what Damian Lillard does. We've seen him as a superstar in his own right last year, year after that, and after that, and after that. He's known for this type of stuff. And for him to go ahead, prevail, put up 35 in the first half and not do a damn thing in the second half with the ball, especially, it's interesting to see. But regardless of the fact, they got the win. And if he can go ahead and assert himself throughout the rest of this series, I'm not going to lie, he might see himself as a top 15 player in the NBA again.
Listen, if he goes online on Twitter and he sees Glorilla in that jersey, he'll be top 10 again.
He's ready. I will say that. I tweeted about this. It's so fucking funny how consistent it is that Dame looks just like Portland Dame when Giannis isn't there. But when Giannis plays and he has to watch him dribble and do his thing and try to get his without his normal rhythm, where is he? Where does his Portland Dame go? Why can he not coexist? Why is his game not scalable to play next to other ball dominant stars? If it's not going to be that, then they have a big problem.
God,
do you think,
man.
Okay, do you think it's more because Dame like needs to be kind of the driving force, or do you think it's more because Giannis hasn't been able to adjust his game to be more to what Dame needs?
Both, but end of the day, Giannis is the best player in the fucking world, exactly. Arguably. We all think he's second to Jokic. Dame needs to be able to be scalable next to other stars more than the other way around. Giannis should do a better job, should be a better role man, should be able to facilitate Dame a little more. But at the end of the day, you're going to have to move around Giannis' game. We're not going to play Damian Lillard basketball. Sure, it's important to bring some elements of that, especially for clutch time, where you know you want the ball in his hands more than Giannis in a last bucket type of situation. But Dame needs a bit of play off ball and not completely lose his rhythm and be a pumpkin when he gets it back.
Yeah, that's true. But at the same time, when I do think about these two, like, whose game is more scalable? It's obviously Dame Lillard.
Should
Dame
be.
Lillard in every scenario, you know? It is. It should be. You're right. And if it's not that, do you try to prioritize Dame in certain lights and have Giannis, like, you know he's a dominant force that can score in any situation around the rim possible? Do you adjust his role in order to get this type you of should. Game on a consistent basis? If you that's should. The scenario, you have to do so.
Do yeah, y'all remember?
Hard to do that.
It is hard. But do y'all remember when Giannis like looked the media in their face and was like, "Listen, man, I'm a role player. Like, I'm just trying to play my role." It's like, if you were, you'd be about it. Like, I like those kinds of like funny lies and stuff like that. It's those situations where I do think that he should be the one adjusting his game to Dame when you've seen the pattern over the course of the year, and it's like, okay, if Dame gets going, I know that I can get 30 in my sleep. There's nobody in the league who can guard me one-on-one. And if Dame is out here doing what he does, then the court extends. Everybody has more space. We can play off of that. I do feel like it should be on Giannis to adjust his game more than the other way around. I'm not saying it's right, but I'm just saying the way that the fit works right now.
It doesn't feel right. Yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
You could definitely argue what has a higher potential, Giannis playing in Dame system or Dame and Giannis system. There's definitely ways to go about that. But end of the day, they're trying to do a mix of both. And at the point, you're in the playoffs now. It's hard to completely change Giannis' style of play on a fly now. Maybe going into next season, we have to really reconsider it if they're going to stay together. Mm-hmm. But for right now, you really don't have any other option other than Dame to get a rhythm with Giannis on the court, you know, playing how they play now.
Yeah.
Dude, the chat is being ridiculous right now.
What did they say?
They're still making the old jokes, and somebody made some joke about some old time. I don't know what they said. Maybe they say Great Depression or something. And someone in the chat was like, you know, you're making a joke, but that's really not funny. That's a really serious time in history that was really bad for a lot of people. And now they're like over here arguing about like, dude, this time was worse than this time. Every time period was worse before modern day. Y'all shut the fuck up and talk about basketball. Why are we talking about the bubonic plague? Stop it.
No, it sounds like they just affected a, or they just literally made a baby boomer in the chat hella mad right now. They just exploded on themselves right now, bro. You're showing your age. Relax. Pipe down.
The stock market crash of 22 was actually very bad. Lots of homes were lost. Shut up.
What's your home in 1950?
God. My grandpa lived through the Great Depression, actually. We get it.
Isaac. Wait, look, don't look at the chat. Somebody told me to say this. Isaac, okay. Spell bubonic right now.
Bubonic.
Is that how you spell it? I have no idea.
Let me see. I think it's how you spell bubonic plague.
You got it. You got it. Good job.
Look at me knowing things. Bubonic plague, also called the Black Death.
2 for 2 on words today. Good job.
I do the spelling shit. I'm actually not good at spelling anymore. I kind of lost that since I got out of school. I don't write shit anymore. So there's so many words. I'm like, wait, how the fuck do I spell that? It happens to me all the time. Like, literally. Once you graduate college, you don't write things down anymore. You just type, like, you never write.
Listen, it still takes me like a half a second to make sure that I'm spelling restaurant correctly.
Dude, that's a hard word to spell. I'm not going to lie. I always get that wrong.
It's a restaurant?
Someone said Isaac knows because he lived through it. Shut the fuck up.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Someone said bro fell off in grammar. He's just like me. Facts, bro. I used to be literate. I don't know what happened. someone said keep the stream up for Lakers game. Now, I gotta lock in and watch the game. So these are going to be like pre-game shows for the playoffs. We were talking about maybe doing watch-alongs, but I think I'd rather do it like this, but I don't know. Y'all let me know what you think.
Yeah. Y'all, I gotta fucking go, bro. It takes me a minute to go ahead and get to my goddamn living room. What Giannis has, I strained the fuck out of my calf. I got a goddamn crutch right now, right behind me. So I gotta skedaddle.
All right.
Limp over to the crutch.
You want me to limp over to the crutch?
On cam, let me see.
I'll show you my crutch.
All right. It's a hand on the solo cam. Give us a tour.
A tour of the crutch. I ain't gonna lie to you. I'm not efficient. This is my first time being on crutches too.
This man got an ice pack on his leg. Weenie.
Yeah.
Weenie Hudson.
It's a little something. It's a little something.
Why not have two crutches? It feels like one crutch would be annoying.
One crutch is annoying.
Just having one armpit hurt.
Nah, I don't even put all that weight on that one fucking leg.
All right, man. That's the end of the stream. It's about to be 4 o'clock. Y'all go lock into the rest of these games today. We'll be back with you guys on Friday for the episode. Should be good.